So in this chapter, I'm trying to reflect on why it is that I seem to run into more coyotes in suburban Chicago than at the farm in southwest Michigan where our cabin is, and what the implications of that are. When I wake at dawn the next morning in the cabin, the fire is out. Hoping to warm up, I pull on some clothes and go for a walk. A few minutes later, when I step out of the woods into a meadow, the first rays of the sun spill over the distant trees and bathe the field in a honey-colored light, turning it into the top of some holy mountain. I dig out my little notebook to record the image when, 50 feet ahead of me, a coyote springs out of the waist-high weeds like a furry jack-in-the-box and then pounces back down on something. When my heart recovers, I sneak a few steps closer to get a better look. He's bigger than I expect, maybe 35 pounds, his fur already thickening for winter. Crunching a mouse, he turns, sees me, and takes off. I'm close enough to hear a snorting breath when he bolts. I sprint after him like an idiot, crashing through the frosted weeds. 10 seconds later, he reappears 200 yards ahead of me in the vineyard that abuts our land. He pauses, looks back at me as if amused, and disappears into the dried vines. This is only the third coyote I've seen in 5 years. I hear them at night sometimes, and once found the remains of a deer kill that suggested coyotes. But I never see them. The coyotes always seem to be just out of sight, gray and brown ghosts loping in the mist along the edges of the day. I grew up in Iowa, fishing and hunting and walking the woods and fields of my friends' farms. But I saw a coyote only once, and it was from a distance at dusk while baling hay. The first coyote I ever saw up close was in the suburbs, in Glen Ellen. One morning while I was jogging, the crash of a garbage can lid drew my eyes to a neighbor's driveway where a thin, mangy dog was chewing on a wedge of pizza crust. He ran when he saw me. Later figured out it wasn't a dog, that coyotes and their families were moving to the burbs, and it wasn't for the schools. Since then, I've often seen coyotes in our neighborhood, walking through our backyard and sleeping in the sun near the playground at Bennett's school. Suburban coyotes do better than their country cousins. There's more to eat and good places to hide. Rural coyotes have a 30% chance of making it through their first year. Urban coyotes are twice as likely to survive that long. In rural areas, the leading cause of coyote death is hunting or trapping. For urban coyotes, it's cars. So suburban towns with slow traffic speeds and large parks or forest preserves, places like Glen Ellen, are a more likely place to see coyotes than here in the woods. Last year, a teacher in suburban Chicago was walking through a large mall parking lot back to her minivan when she noticed a thin animal slinking between the rows of cars and slowly coming toward her. Suddenly, the coyote lunged for a miniature poodle, clamping his jaws around the dog's hindquarters. She grabbed the dog's head, and for 30 seconds there in the parking lot, the 60-year-old high school teacher and the coyote had a tug of war. It ended when she managed to pick up and throw a shopping bag full of clothes at the coyote, which finally let go and ran off. Lured by the smell of sizzling meat, a coyote recently strolled through the propped open door of a Quiznos on Adams Street in downtown Chicago. The owner at first thought it was a dog. The docile 30-pound canine walked past the counter without ordering and lay down on a stack of Diet Pepsi in an open cooler. Though it remained quiet, two of the four patrons left immediately. The other two stayed and finished their chicken sandwiches. A large crowd of passers-by and tourists soon gathered at the front window to see the wild visitor and snap pictures. An hour later, an animal control officer arrived with a catch pole and worked the thrashing animal back to his van. No one knows where that coyote came from. They catch 10 or 15 in the city every year, but usually closer to a likely home, a lakefront park, an isolated trash dump, or a patch of trees near the railroad tracks. This coyote would have had to weave through a half mile of bumper-to-bumper traffic and harried shoppers and soapbox preachers to reach the Quiznos. Having given up on the coyote I surprised in the meadow, I walk back toward our cabin. The sun is burning the frost off. Some cottonwood leaves, which have already turned from yellow to brown, swirl in the breeze. The oaks are still pink and orange, but they too are turning toward winter. I sit down in the cabin to read a stack of news articles about coyotes. My favorite is about O'Hare Airport. Two jets temporarily aborted their landings because a pack of coyotes was hunting on their landing strip. And airport workers often see them trotting along the runways. In the last 15 years, 23 coyotes have been hit by airplanes in Illinois. Cars, I understand, but airplanes? Though I suppose runway kill is a sign not just of the explosion of coyotes in Chicago, but of the wild escalation in the number of planes and flights in the last 20 years. About 80 million people passed through O'Hare last year. There are 2,500 flights per day. It's not just the coyotes who are on the move. All these odd intersections of coyote and human lives point to the shrinking habitat we share. And though most of the 2,000 or so coyotes that live in Chicago remain unseen, the number of encounters with people is increasing. These chance confrontations with urban coyotes excite us because they don't belong there. Because they somehow wandered into our high-tech, climate-controlled world, because a coyote sparks a deep nostalgia for the wild, for the natural world we've conquered and nearly destroyed. They spark the memory of ourselves as animals. But urban coyotes also frighten us, because they don't belong there. Because no one wants their miniature dachshund eaten as a midnight snack or to be sitting in a lawn chair some evening in a carefully pruned yard and turn to see a dirty, shifty animal stealing a pork chop off a stainless steel gas grill. The coyote reminds us, we may be animals, but we are not wild animals. If you want wild, try the Nature Channel. Yet beyond the excitement and fear the coyote provokes and beyond the wildness it represents is the simple truth that for good or ill, our lives are tangled together. The coyote's arrival into our territory is less an intrusion than a natural migration, from the once plentiful fields and woodlands to the islands of available habitat that dot Chicago's westward sprawl. By necessity, they are moving from the disappearing country to the suburbs and the city. And this movement is aided by the network of forest preserves and parks and the green corridors that connect them. Like sparrows and dandelions and people, coyotes adapt well to changing and disturbed environments. They flourish on the edges of biocommunities, which are divided and multiplied by each new road or subdivision or golf course or shopping mall that we build. It's getting edgier all the time. The coyote's booming success in the suburbs is tied to the success of another edge species, the Canada goose. The beautiful honking V's crossing the sky in October, heading south, were also once a lovely emblem of the wild in the Midwest. But their population exploded in the 1980s and 90s. Now, many don't fly south, but live in the suburbs year-round on huge, well-mowed corporate center lawns near warm retention ponds. Several hundred Canada geese live on the grounds around the building where I teach. I arrived there one afternoon several years ago to see a goose looking out at me like an anxious student from behind a glass door. Someone had let or lured him into the small glass foyer between the entrance doors, which led to the carpeted classrooms, and the exit doors, which led back outside. Totally confused by the whirring fluorescent lights and the transparent walls on both sides, the goose went crazy when I opened the door. Hissing and snapping, he tried to fly through the exterior glass doors to the grass and sky on the other side. Whomp! The collision stunned him. I opened the door, and he stumbled out. As with coyotes, such stories are common. And though I felt sorry for that bewildered goose, many people have lost their sympathy. Due to their aggression at nesting time and the environmental degradation caused by their feces, geese can be a nuisance. This attitude is confirmed by the new geese police companies, which specialize in goose removal, and by the growing arsenal of goose eradication products you can find at the local hardware store. Given the growing intolerance with the Chicago geese invasion of the 90s, it was not surprising that a landmark study of the goose population in 2000 drew a lot of attention. It showed that the once soaring population had abruptly halted. What happened? Canada geese, with their size and strength, can often fight off raccoons and foxes and mink and prevent them from eating their eggs and goslings, but they are no match for a coyote. A single animal or a small band of coyotes can pillage an entire nesting ground in one or two evenings, stealing dozens of eggs and caching those they don't eat right away for a later meal. In a few years, the coyotes cut the annual growth rate of the Canada goose population in Chicagoland from nearly 20% to less than 2%. Urban coyotes have curbed Chicago's goose population and kept the deer and rodent population in check, and they don't attack people. Yet they are still considered outsiders, dangerous, not welcome. The fear and worry they conjure seems to outweigh our nostalgia over their wildness. As I sit in the cabin tonight, I wonder why that is. Why we think the coyotes belong someplace else. Someplace like here, in this yet undeveloped land, rather than in Glen Ellyn. And I wonder why it seems so bizarre to see 5 coyotes in the burbs for each one I see here in the woods. The same is true for skunks and red foxes. I'm not sure who belongs where anymore, but maybe that's the point. As the boundaries between country, suburb, and city, and between forest, farm, and factory have blurred, so is the idea of the wild. Last week I saw an ad for an Amtrak train line from downtown Chicago to New Buffalo, Michigan. The commute takes just 90 minutes from Chicago and is expected to catalyze more new housing developments. Not just more summer homes for the tourist town, but subdivisions for permanent residents who will work in the city. It is certainly better to train to work than to drive, and for people to belong to a community rather than just vacation there. But I had never thought that Chicago would stretch north around the lake this far, or that this little cabin we cobbled together here in the woods might someday be part of a Chicago suburb. But I think it's possible, which is ironic and depressing, and a bit amusing, particularly now, as I walk through the woods watching and wondering when the new neighbors will arrive, when the coyotes will move in.